So I want to look at how this wonderful system changed. And I want to begin by looking at some of the research that I've done when I wrote my book Truth or Dare in the late 80s. And I was looking very much at the question of why, if we had this nice system of integration with nature and religions that celebrated life and celebrated the body, how'd that change into what we got today? And if we had egalitarian cultures, how'd that shift into cultures of power over and patriarchy? And I looked particularly at ancient Sumer. Sumer is the land that now is Iraq, and in ancient times it later became Babylonia and then was conquered by the Assyrians. It's a place where many, many civilizations have flourished and declined. And it's also the place where writing developed the earliest. And so we have the earliest records of myths and stories and the earliest written records of religion. When writing first developed in most places, it was basically used for accounting. And the temples would keep track of how much grain and how much oil came in. But over time, it began to be used to write down stories and write down myths and write down poetry. And I think often it was used for that at times when people felt that their oral traditions maybe were threatened with being lost because of changes and because of transitions. And if you look at Sumer, you'll find the earliest writing comes from a time when already this old European matrifocal system was changing. Matrifocal, it's like, some of us don't like the term matriarchal because it implies rule by women in the same way that patriarchal implies rule by men. But matrifocal means sort of mother-focused, focused, oriented toward this female principle of bringing life into the world rather than focused on war or death or power. So these matrifocal cultures, by the time writing appears in the third millennium BCE, were already under threat, under attack, being changed. And that may be why some of the early myths got written down. Even so, you can see in the early mythologies in Sumer this delight in life. You'll see texts that are the sacred marriage texts that celebrate the union of the goddess Inanna and Demutsi, let's say, in Sumer, and that are just beautiful, delightful celebrations of the erotic and celebrations of the body. I'm going to read you just a couple passages. So, for example, the goddess Inanna, when she's being given her ritual bath before the sacred marriage, has her attendants sing a song in praise of her parts. Inanna was praising them, had her parts extolled in song. My crescent-shaped barge of heaven, so well belayed, full of loveliness like the new moon. My untilled plot left so fallow in the desert. My hillock land so well watered. My parts piled up with levees, well watered. And the translator, who was Turkel Jacobson, kind of jumps in there to assure us that the reason she kept saying well-watered was because she was taking a bath, not because of anything else you might have in mind about how your sexual parts get well-watered. Leave that to your imagination. Beautiful stuff also about male sexuality. And male sexuality in this era is never identified with weaponry. It's never identified with violence. It's always identified with food. And it's seen as this force that gives life. So here's a song about the sacred king, you know, and his mighty rising and his mighty rising. The shoots and the buds rise up. The king's loins and its mighty rising. Did the vines rise up? Did the grains rise up? Did the desert fill with green like a pleasurable garden? And to me, I think that's such a beautiful evocation of what it means to be in a culture that does really honor the erotic and honor life. And it takes us out of this realm in which we have to see either male sexuality as violent or female sexuality is somehow dirty and suspect, and brings us into a world where we can truly see that the erotic is this wonderful, amazing, life-giving, energizing power that's seen as not only being pleasurable for the people involved and not only bringing forth children, but actually bringing forth the fertility of the land itself, the life of the land, the falling of the rains, the flowing of the rivers. The water that is needed to give life to the land was identified with the sexual juices that are aroused in that erotic meaning of goddess and god. The god was also identified with animals. And this is one of my other favorite passages. It goes, "Make your milk sweet and thick, my bridegroom. My shepherd, I will drink your fresh milk. Let the milk of the goat flow in my sheepfold. Fill my holy churn with honey cheese." You can imagine that. It's a nice Sunday morning liturgy. And in fact, we really use that a lot, or some of those passages or similar things when we're doing ritual, when we're celebrating the seasons, when we're celebrating the renewal of life in the spring. Now, in that era, women were also very much involved in public life. A lot of the government was by clan and later by kind of assemblies that would at times choose a temporary war leader, and women took part in those assemblies. And women actually at times were battle leaders, but they were also priestesses. They were also scribes in the temples. They also were clan mothers, and they had a lot of temporal as well as spiritual power.